America's ready to get back to work, but to win in the new economy, you need every advantage to succeed. Smart companies run on NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud business system. With NetSuite, you'll have visibility and control over your financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more. Everything you need, all in one place. Whether you're doing a million or hundreds of millions in sales, NetSuite lets you manage every penny with precision. You'll have the agility to compete with anyone, work from anywhere, and run your whole company right from your phone. Join over 20,000 companies who trust NetSuite to make it happen. NetSuite surveyed hundreds of business leaders and assembled a playbook of the top strategies they're using as America reopens for business. Receive your free guide, 7 actions businesses need to take now, and schedule your free product tour at netsuite.com/Golic. Get your free guide and schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/Golic. That's netsuite.com/Golic.
Oh, are we? Or is it just a big tease again? Golic and Wingo with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN2, presented by Progressive Insurance. Our phone guests joined us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, like our next guest, who we haven't had on nearly enough to talk about this because he's been busy doing other things, which we understand and support, but we always enjoy our time with him. We're delighted to be joined by our Major League Baseball analyst, Eduardo Perez. So, Eduardo, in light of the movement we saw yesterday slightly from the owners, are you at all optimistic that we actually will have baseball played this summer?
I'm optimistic, guys. First of all, that brought chills that you told me that you don't have me on enough. I really appreciate that. I really do. So that made me emotional, and it's also made me emotional to think that maybe soon we could have baseball back here stateside. Something that I believe we all really want in so many ways, baseball and all the other sports to go along with it.
So along that line, while a lot of people I think felt that way, if you look at the end number, they offered really no more in guaranteed money to the players than their last offer, because we see a change in game numbers, but really we all need to look at the last number. Theirs is $1.5 billion, and the union is around $2.2 billion of money, of amount games played to the amount of money they're going to get. So it's in the union's hands now with this proposal. What should they come back with? Or do you think they're just going to dig their heels in and stay where they are?
I think they're going to dig their heels a little bit here. And again, the union has said from all along, look, we want 100% of the compensation that we're going to get. When we get back on the field, they've been consistent with it. It's not surprising. And at the end of the day, you know, they have not given up even a 2% of it, because they feel that for every dollar that's earned that they're going to play for, they should earn during that time. They understand, easily that there's been a lot of money that's been lost in revenue from both the owner side and also from Major League Baseball side and from the player side also. So everybody's here at a loss. It's unfortunate that we have not been able to that they have not been able to come to a resolution sooner. I think it's frustrating to many of us that are broadcasting and trying to go out there and broadcast games and reading the news. But the players are sticking to their guns when it comes to this.
And part of that, Eduardo, has been the idea of this grievance. And for Major League Baseball, we know that the most recent plan they presented to the players had as a part of it that the players would waive their right to file a grievance against the league. Would you be willing to do that if you were a player in this situation and you were part of that group to waive your right to file that grievance?
Again, the players want more than the 60 games that are being put out there right now. And for them to put the grievance aside and say that we're not going to file grievance or not, there's a lot of money to be lost. And the Players Association, from my understanding, the entire time from the first offer that was done early on to where they are now. And remember, May 26th, it was they had offered it was an 82-game regular season schedule starting in July after a 21-day spring training. That was MLB MLB's first offer. Then MLBPA came back on the 31st and said 114. You keep going back and forth, and the more we keep discussing this, the less amount of time there's going to be played, and the players feel that, look, there's been just a lot of stalling going on here, and they feel that they have grounds for grievance. And I think this is where Rob Manfred wanted to get together with Tony Clark and just go mano a mano in one room and say, let's make sure that grievance isn't filed, because they know that there would be grounds for it. And I'd be surprised right now if it goes into a 60-game season that, one, the players would be willing to accept that, and two, in order to get the grievance taken away, I'd be shocked if the players decide that that's reasonable enough.
So again, Eduardo, so we have a counterproposal, and the players have gone through it and are going through it now. So what's the next move? If you were with the players, right, you were playing and you're in those meetings, you're having those discussions, you've seen the proposal, you understand that it's still the same amount of money and you're trying to get more games, what do you do to keep this thing moving?
I hold my ground if it's the 70 games. And one of the biggest reasons is because all the offers, the one through the three offers that were done before this latest one, they were pretty much the same message. It was just verbalized differently. And I think the players realized that. I think it was explained to them well in that aspect. The owners keep going up with it. I think there's a separation, and I believe the players believe that there's a separation a little bit between some owners, depending on where they are economically. And because of it, all you need is 75% of the owners to vote in favor of if it's for a season and 70 games. And I think a lot of them want to be able to go through with that because they understand that the brand of their brand is very important to the fan base. And in order to get fans to believe in that brand, right now the optics aren't good with the owners. So yes, if I'm one of the players, I'd vote for 70 games. The least amount of games that I would accept if I'm a player is 66.
Wow, look, I like that. 66 games, go for 70 games. That's nice right in the middle there. Well, that would be interesting. What are the other things, and where you stand? We know where purists may stand with this, but what about the universal DH? Would you be all for that? Not only now that it's in, but for good in baseball?
Yeah. You know, I used to be against it because I'm looking at the manager's experience of being able to take out a pitcher depending if he's up second in the lineup, the double switches. Remember, I was the type of player that used to come in a lot in double switches, or if I started the game, that was seldomly, I was always taken out in a double switch situation. So, yeah, it affects the way you manage a game. But for player standpoints and for economics, it would benefit the players to accept it because one extra hitter, the way that the DH has been paid, as of late, you look at it and you're like, that will raise salaries. And at the same time, most likely it will add on maybe another roster spot where anyway it was going to go up to 26 position players this year, 26 players in all this year in the roster. I would be for it this year. I've changed my mind. A couple years ago, I would have said, no, I don't like the DH. I'm a purist when it comes to it.
Eduardo Perez with us here on Golic and Wingo, our ESPN Major League Baseball analyst. Eduardo, one of the other things that seems far off in the distance at this point, despite the fact that it's going to be vital to if the sport does resume, are the health and safety concerns surrounding the coronavirus. As a player, if you're looking at some of the things that the MLB has proposed in this regard, what's your biggest concern about returning to play during this pandemic?
Family. It would be, how do I go to my family knowing that I'm not knowing if I'm 100% clean or not when it comes to not having the virus? It would be a sacrifice that one would have to make. But then again, we're all making sacrifices in all of this. And right now we've been arguing so much about the economics that if I had to be away from my family for a certain amount of period to make sure that my wife and kids and even my parents would be safe, it's a sacrifice that I would have to make to be away from them. We've seen so many frontline people that are in the frontline essential workers have to make that sacrifice. And if I'm a player, I would not even think twice of being aware that I'm going to be in an environment where I could be susceptible. If it's via flight, via hotels, if it's even with your own teammates, I have to make sure that everyone is accountable and everyone does it right. So my biggest concern, without a doubt, is family first and foremost.
So with all that being said, Eduardo, as we go forward and we feel like there is some momentum here, we're up against the clock, right? How quickly does this have to happen one way or the other?
I think a lot of that stuff is already, you know, we haven't heard from it, but I believe a lot of that stuff has already been cleared and they've been discussed. I think it's always been about the money. It's been about the days. The players and talking to a few of them behind the scenes, this is their major concern. And, you know, they have 38 votes that they have to hold the line, and they've had the majority of the players have been very united when it comes to that. From my understanding, there's been a couple players that have been a little bit on the other end of, like, I want to get paid. We need to get paid right now. But most of the players, and I'm talking over 90% of the players, have been strongly holding the line and knowing that it is important for them, not only for now, but for the CBA coming up, that they stay together and they show the owners and Major League Baseball that they are still very united and strong.
Yep. Hopeful.
And a lot of that because they got hammered in 2016 and they don't want
they got hammered. Let's be honest here. They got obliterated.
Yep. They did. All right, Eduardo, man. Appreciate your time this morning. Thanks, buddy.
See you, buddy.
You got it, guys.
Yeah, I mean, they did. They got hit hard in 16. They're not going to let that happen again, especially to remember after the 2021 season that December is when the CBA ends, so we have that to worry about. Quick note, programming note.
Yeah.
We are basically heard around the country. Okay. Heard and seen.
Yeah.
ESPN2 and ESPN Radio around the country.
Right.
And just know that we're on for another 50 minutes or so, 50.
Okay.
And the fate of us being on is with my wife.
Okay.
She texted me during that interview with Eduardo, and our cable company, which everything we're running on is basically off of my service here in
right.
this house.
In the basement, yeah.
Okay? She just texted me about 5 minutes ago during that segment and said, the cable company, we have the box for like the neighborhood is outside of our house.
Right.
She said, the cable truck is outside by the box.
Oh, no.
I'm like, I copied it and texted to Mike, and we just looked at each other like, oh, my God. If they go out there and they, that's me. I'm sorry. If they go out there and disrupt service,
yeah.
We're done.
Okay.
We're off. So Chris texted me. She said, I'm out there talking to them right now to hopefully them not interrupting any service in this. But
we live on the edge.
There is a possibility.
Man. We live on the edge.
If they have to fix something and shut down the service, we are gone. We will be done for the rest of the show. Oh my God.
So yeah, listen.
ND Mom. Have at it.
It's the new normal. We're all on the wire right now.
Fate of the show is in your hands, Chris. Hopefully that works.
And she's the most capable one of the four
that's
of
true.
Us.
That's true. So. That's very true. Yeah.
I will say this as we get it back to the baseball discussion. There's one thing that Jeff Passan said in that rejoin. I've heard it a couple of times that he's 100% right. Have we heard from one owner that says, yeah, man, I really want to play baseball? Have we heard that? I don't think we have. We've heard losses would be biblical. We've heard, you know, we should have revenue sharing.
Yeah, that teams aren't as profitable as one thing.
Says a guy who's worth $2.3 billion for $150 million.
I think the one guarantee that we can say is there are owners that probably would rather bag the season than play.
For sure.
I think that's about the one crystal clear thing we can, without anybody saying it, we can all agree on. I don't know how many. I have no idea how many. But there are some that would just say, we are better off bagging this entire season. But I don't think it's going to get to that. I do think we're going to play. And again, it's about the number. Will the league come up from $1.5 billion to pay the players? Will the players come down for their $2.2, $2.3 billion that they want to get played? And will the players agree not to file a grievance if they come to a number? I mean, that's what this is all coming down to.
I mean, it would be nice if one of the owners would actually come out there and say, yeah, I really want to play baseball.
At this point, does it matter? Does it really matter?
It's also one of those things where it very well could have been said, but it's never going to be the headline as long as people like Tom Ricketts are saying the losses are going to be biblical, as long as the owner in Arizona is basically saying that
revenue
is profitable. All those different things. So someone could have said it along the way, but you can say it all you want, and if those other things are tagged with it, we're never going to notice or care. So that's one of those things. And even as the players say it, like, you can say all that. You can say we 100% want to play baseball, but it's always for both sides under the terms that we have dictated. We want to play baseball as long as we're getting 100% of our pro rata. Like, it's never that simple for anyone. So the sentiment is nice. And I agree with Dad in that I'm sure there are owners, because of the financials that we've heard over and over in this situation, if we're playing games without fans, we're losing money on this one. So if you think the arrow is pointed down, I would reason to believe that there are some of those owners in places they don't talk about at parties that are like, yeah, it'd be nice if we can bag this.
Yeah.
We nice
places
we can just
don't
this.
Talk about at parties.
Well, it's very, very true. So it's clearly not simple. Something else that isn't simple is Mike Gundy trying to work on his relationship with his players after what happened over the weekend. Long story recapped. Pictured in a t-shirt from a news network that many of his players think marginalized who they are as people and the things that they stood up for. And one of the best players at Oklahoma State, Chuba Hubbard, the running back, tweeted, said, I am not okay with this. Mike Gundy and Chuba had a very awkward video put together with a dap that seemed very, very strange. And then Mike Gundy had a team meeting and then had to release a longer, more full-throated apology that Mike Golic Jr. thought was written to perfection, although maybe not delivered to perfection. And ESPN Plus is chronicling Oklahoma State football this entire season, so we happen to have access that we might not have otherwise had to both Mike Gundy and Chuba Hubbard and other players, and we actually got more conversation and sound, starting with Mike Gundy on this ESPN Plus series we're doing on Oklahoma State, basically saying, man, was I wrong.
I didn't know that some of the stances they had taken. I didn't know that. But then you look at it and say, okay, I was a dumbass. I put the shirt on not knowing enough about the shirt. I understood exactly why the players got frustrated when they found that out, or whatever, however they found out what it was. I didn't know. I didn't know till the next day. Well, I knew that night, but I didn't confirm it till I did a little research. And I was like, what a dumbass. So that was my fault. The way the players feel about me and I upset them and broke their heart, that bothered me more than losing games. And that's the truth. But that's why now, that as humans, when we make mistakes, the only thing we can do is admit we're wrong, own up to it, be humble, accept critical people, criticism, make it better, and move forward.
That would have been great the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and this is one of those situations where you hear that and you go, all right, he's saying it's my fault for not being informed enough on this thing that I was endorsing with my t-shirt, which if you're having the adult conversation with anyone, as you're explaining this to, if Mike Gundy were explaining this to one of the athletes on his team coming up, you know, you've got to be cognizant that whatever you put on, the things that you do are going to be seen as endorsement because you're an Oklahoma State football player.
Right.
And you've got that platform, and who you are, especially around this community, is going to matter. And coaches, since I was very young, always echo that idea that because of your platform, because of who you are as an athlete, you've got to be careful. Mike Gundy giving himself that advice retroactively on this, something he should have had in real time. Now it is, all right, the sincerity of the apology things. Are we going to give Mike Gundy the benefit of the doubt of saying that we believe all that stuff? At this point, that is not something that he has earned through the course of this. And so it's how you get to a place where all of this becomes believable, where the change that you've talked about, Mike Gundy has said himself,
right,
there will be changes made, become things that we believe. It's by taking and creating action. It's by accountability.
So, and I asked this early because we see these, all of a sudden, these changes, the change of thought, and you'd like to think maybe they did, it is realistic or sincere, but I've asked the question, does it matter as long as change occurs, as long as he proactively helps change occur? Because again, people keep hanging on the t-shirt. It's about more than the t-shirt. He can wear whatever t-shirt he wants. He can listen to whatever network he wants. The issue is, just as a coach tells players, everything you wear, say, or do represents you, your family name, and the school. Well, same here. So you're wearing a shirt where that network is, it seems, at complete odds with what 80% of your roster believes in. So there's going to be a natural disagreement going on there with, wait, you came into my living room. I'm following your lead for the next 4 or 5 years. And now on this issue that is much greater than sports, you are listening to and talking about how you like something that is against what we are fighting for. You can see where that's going to come into play. And you see, I agree that what Gundy said there sounded great, but I'll continue to ask, do we really think he has completely changed? And if so, does it even matter as long as you get positive change?
I think that part does, because you can say what he thinks if it's about him, you know, because people have said, what, is Mike Gundy not allowed to be conservative? Of course he's allowed to be. There are plenty of people that are. But the issue that's at the heart of all of this as it pertains to the T-shirt is, you know, Black Lives Mattering, the whole notion of everything that's been protested about in recent weeks, stuff that's been demonstrated as very important to his players. I'm sure that's one of those things that over time, if you're not being truthful about the way you feel, is going to come out and is going to manifest itself in other ways, which brings up the real thing that's at the core of all this, which is other players that voice concerns about the way that they were treated or made to feel as a part of that program. And so if you're not honest about the way that you're thinking, if you're not sincere about trying to learn more about the thought process that led you to that point, I have a feeling instances like that could still be a problem. And that's still really what we're talking about here with Oklahoma State, is players that voiced not feeling comfortable as a part of that program, past or present. And that's really what's got to be reckoned with here. Not Mike Gundy being conservative or wanting to watch a news network, but you're right, the thoughts and feelings that bring you to that place and create that environment when you're the person calling the shots there.
Well, there's another layer to this story now, and it's up on ESPN.com. Alfred Williams, a former star linebacker at Colorado, says he wants an apology from Mike Gundy after renewing an allegation that the Oklahoma State coach used the N-word against him in 1989 when Gundy was a player for Oklahoma State as their quarterback. Williams recounted the incident during an interview Wednesday night with the Oklahoman. Williams told the paper that he doesn't want Gundy to be fired, but he does want an apology and to see, quote, some growth, end quote. Williams was one of multiple Colorado players who said in 1989 that Gundy, then the quarterback, used the racial slur during the Buffaloes' 41-17 victory over Oklahoma State. Gundy denied the allegations after the game. Williams went on to say, I remember it was the first time that the University of Colorado beat Oklahoma State while I was there. It was a big win. It was a really big win. And I remember Mike Gundy called me the N-word. That's what I remember. Oklahoma State denied to comment Wednesday when contacted by the Oklahoman, and Gundy has not addressed Williams' latest allegations. ESPN has also contacted Oklahoma State seeking some comment. Much more to get into with Golic and Wingo, and we will do so after this.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your goldfish to sing Bizet's Carmen? There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
All right, so what is wrong? You're over there whimpering in the corner. What is happening?
All right, so listen. Here's what happened. I'm logging on to Twitter.com.
Uh-huh.
I look up here, and I see a tweet from Alvin Kamara. Mm-hmm. And it says, wait, Beethoven was black? Somebody confirmed. Which already, I'm like, all right, this is going to be a morning. Clearly, we're going to be doing something here. I scroll down and see someone commented, he was a Saint Bernard.
Oh, jeez. That was it?
That's
that was it.
I mean, what What a sequence! And also, is Beethoven black?
I don't know.
I need to know.
I have no knowledge of
that.
We do know it was a St. Bernard.
Yeah, it was a very big dog.
If you like that movie,
very big dog. Very big dog.
Wow.
So that's the
that
thing
was that, it, huh?
That was the thing that undid you.
Yes.
All right.
Wow. You guys didn't think that was fine. You know what? Fine. Sorry for dealing with the most highbrow, humor-filled show on earth here, apparently. My dad, who openly laughs at the sound of his own farts, is all of a sudden too big for his britches when it comes to a bait. He just started giggling.
The guttural giggle that you just got out of him.
I mentioned his farts, and it caused laughter. What if Beethoven farted? Would that make you laugh?
That'd be pretty good.
So back to the thing I thought we were going to talk about, which was lists in the NFL.
Yeah, lists. You guys love the list. So we had the quarterback list yesterday of the top 10. Now we have the wide receiver list of the top 10 that you and I, all three of us, disagree on, because it has Michael Thomas number one on that list, and I think that is correct. You guys do not agree. It's Michael Thomas one. It is
Julio Jones two,
Tyreek Hill three, and DeAndre Hopkins four in that one.
Worth noting, Devontae Adams getting some love at five, which is probably well deserved considering for the load he's had.
And I think, wasn't Amari Cooper six, which seemed a little high?
Little Rich, Mike Evans, 7th, Keenan Allen, 8th, Chris Godwin, 9th, and Odell Beckham Jr. rounds out the top 10. So first I want to look at this, and then I want to tweak something a little for you guys. So thoughts on this one. Trey and I both said we would probably go Julio Jones at number 1. And this is worth noting, going into the 2020 season. So in my mind, this is projecting who we think is going to be the best wideout.
You guys both say Julio Jones. I say definitely still Michael Thomas.
And I understand one of my, I think, main arguments for this would be Michael Thomas. A lot of his prowess last year was he was breaking the single season record for receptions in a year. He was the focal point of that offense. And should things go well, that won't be the case this year. He would get some relief in that. And so I think just by sheer volume, you would see at the very least a drop in
production. By sheer volume, he was so far ahead, everybody could still lead the league, maybe just by not as much this year. All I know is, everybody knew where the ball was going, or 80% of the time.
Can't guard Mike.
And it still got there, and he still made the catches. So, okay. So we disagree on that.
But we wanted to take this to the next level, right?
And so the plot twist I had here is, all right, we love, and especially, you know, basketball, we always love doing big threes. We did duos a lot last year. And so I looked at this list and I said, how much does this list change if all of a sudden you attach the second best wideout on each team to that wide receiver? And so you make it a duo instead of making it just the wide receiver in question. How much does that list change? And I think right off the bat, you have a very easy one, because in my mind, it's all playing for second place. This list has Chris Godwin at 9 and Mike Evans at 7. You have two in the top 10 already. That is so clearly the number one wide receiver duo in football.
No argument for me.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
You'll give it?
You sound hesitant.
I'm looking up the other thing that you brought up, so I'm doing a lot.
Who are you hesitant to?
Is Beethoven black?
Of another duo. Who are you looking at possibly as another duo?
I'm doing other things, so I'm just agreeing with you there.
All right, okay. So he's out of this conversation
No, I'm good. Okay.
So in my mind, that is clearly the number one duo on this one. And our researcher put together some great notes. 3 combined drop passes for those two last year.
That's ridiculous.
Well, and we know with Jameis Winston, part of it was the ability to push the ball downfield. Certainly, Jameis did a lot of good, but he also put the ball in harm's way a fair amount. So it stands to reason that's probably even more of an impressive stat on that one. So aside from them, to me being the obvious number one, if we're all in agreement on that, I think working on who number two is the next best question.
You know what's amazing to me? The stat that we got here from Henry, phenomenal stats, that I didn't even realize. Kenny Galladay and Marvin Jones led from duos for touchdown receptions for Detroit. And we know how much of the year Matthew Stafford missed.
Jeff Driskel and David Blau.
I mean, that is impressive. Galladay led the NFL with 11 receiving touchdowns.
I think seeing that, I would look at this list and say, if you were to take the production you got from them, neither of which was in the list as an individual in the top 10, combine them together, though, and put them up against Devontae Adams and blank?
Yeah.
You're probably vaulting those two into the top tens and knocking Devontae Adams plus his out of the top 10.
As far as duos?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And we need to be clear about something here, because you know this is going to come up. We're talking about just receivers, not tight ends.
No, no tight
pass catchers.
Yes. Right.
So that's why we're not looking at Tyreek and Travis Kelce or George Kittle and Deebo Samuel.
So who is second? Is it Mike Williams and Keenan Allen?
I would like to make a case for
Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup.
I know you would, Cowboy fan. Yeah,
and they just added CeeDee Lamb.
Well, no, we only have two. Only
I know. Oh,
only two. Well, so number two gets interesting to me because in my mind, number two, that one's certainly up there. I would number two right now in my brain would either be DeAndre, again, because of the weight of this, DeAndre Hopkins and Larry Fitzgerald as a two combo there,
that's
or Michael
good.
Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders. You're going to talk about him as one. Adding Emmanuel Sanders very to true. That one, to me, is a big boom for that one. Fits well with what they do and the overall production you're going to get out of those
could
guys
could that vault
in general.
Them into the top three, do you think?
I mean, it could make them. It could make them number two.
Legitimately number two.
If you've got what this list has as the number one receiver, I think at the very least they move probably the least out of that when they're close to the top. Because what it'd be Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley,
right,
on their side, right, for Atlanta. I think you'd have to look seriously at Michael Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders for number two on that one, because then it's Hopkins and Fitz come to mind big time on this one. Keenan Allen and Mike Williams are in that conversation. Do you put Tyreek Hill with Sammy Watkins potentially in that? Who would you consider the number two? Because we know it's probably Travis Kelce.
Right. So we're not counting tight ends. Are we underplaying? How about Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp?
I'm glad you said that. I was just about to bring them up because I don't think anyone looks at either one of those two guys and says he's a number one.
Yeah, Cooper Kupp tied for second in the NFL last year with 10 receiving touchdowns.
But they're both really good number twos.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That may be another one. Coming off the board, does the combination of those two vault them into the top 10? And if so, who are you knocking out in that one?
Yeah, because Robert Woods, I think, is a very underrated receiver. And Cooper, you know, is just he's Jared Goff's favorite target.
But like we talked about, Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry, like those were 2,000-yard receivers on the same team despite the way that offense struggled.
Well, for that qualifier, just so people understand, here are the teams, all the teams that had multiple 1,000-yard wide receivers last year. It was the Browns with Landry and Odell. It was the Bucks with Evan and Godwin. It was the Chargers with Mike Williams and Keenan Allen. The Cowboys with Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup, and the Rams with Woods and Kupp. So those were the five teams. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, those were.
Attaboy.
There you go. No, six. Those five. Those were the five that had 2,000-yard receivers.
So. Again, are we all in agreement that we think that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have the number one receiving duo in football?
Yes.
So, if we've got to pick a number two going into this year, remember, so it's who we think is going to be the best duo going into this year, knowing full well that the Chargers are going to have a different quarterback under center for them.
Correct.
For the first time in a while. Knowing full well that the Browns have changed coaches and there's a lot going on with that offense that's going to be different there this season. For the Cowboys, you mentioned they added CeeDee Lamb to the fold there as well. For the Saints, we know they added Emmanuel Sanders to this one. Who are you guys going with for your two spot?
I think I'm going to go Michael Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders.
I think there's a proven track record there and the quarterback is still there. And they're again, the fact that they're both veterans in what's going to be a ridiculously weird and shortened offseason and training camp and run up to the season, I think helps.
I think they're the fun upside play in this one. And
The dark horse to me is Galladay and Jones if Stafford plays all 16 games.
Yeah. Wow. That's the one I got to think long and hard about because of the consistency though. I think I'd give the nod to the Saints right now for that.
Yeah. The dark horse for me might be Amari and CeeDee Lamb supplanting Michael Gallup in that situation.
Or at the very least, it opening up more
for
Amari and Gallup. But we know they still don't have a quarterback.
They don't have a signed quarterback.
Yeah, listen, you can say it. You can parse it however you want there.
We're inside a month.
Here we are.
And that thing's going to get... Boy, it feels like it's been a long time since we had that conversation. A lot of other stuff's been going on.
We're holding that ace for a while when we really need it in the thick of July sports talk.
That one's right at the sleeve as we're sitting down there getting ready to play some cards.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name? Check. Birthday? Social security? Is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
The great thing about facts, they're proven. Like the fact that crude oil contains impurities. Or that base oil made from natural gas is 99.5% free of impurities. And the fact that Pennzoil is the first synthetic motor oil made from natural gas, not crude oil. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil.
based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30.
Golic & Wingo, brought to you by Discover. Get your free credit scorecard today, even if you're not a Discover customer. It includes your FICO credit score, and checking your scorecard won't hurt your credit. Learn more at discover.com/credit scorecard. Limitations apply.
All right, Golic & Wingo here with you. As we're all dealing with how sports are trying to come back in the middle of this pandemic and everything that's going on, we talked to Dr. Alan Sills, the chief NFL medical officer, earlier today about the plans that the NFL has in place. And he had said one thing that, you know, the virus will determine how we play and how all this stuff is. We're all these things and we're trying to mitigate them. But at the end of the day, you know, the virus will dictate how things are going to be handled or not handled. Well, that's very interesting because baseball was shook a little bit when Dr. Anthony Fauci, basically said, you know, I would try and wrap things up for too late in October, because that's when the second wave of this thing may come back. And I had at least one baseball player tell me, yeah, that was a real wake up call for everybody in that sport. And it got us to thinking about football, and football's not only played in September, but October, November, December, and January,
so,
outdoors.
So Dr. Fauci has now chimed in on football teams because he had mentioned the baseball not going into October. So Anthony Fauci says football teams would need to emulate plans by the NBA and MLS for a bubble format or consider not playing this season due to the coronavirus pandemic. Again, Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease and a key member of the White House task force, told CNN that football players would need to be isolated from others and tested regularly. He said unless players are essentially in a bubble, insulated from the community, and they are tested nearly every day, it would be very hard to see how football is able to be played this fall if there is a second wave, which is certainly a possibility, and which would be complicated by the predictable flu season. Football may not happen this year.
That,
oh boy,
that is a Fauci bomb.
I'm going to say, and listen, it's the end of the show today. We can at Golic & Wingo, you can tweet in your plan. I don't know where the hell you do 32 teams, 1,800 players in a bubble somewhere.
Las Vegas.
Where do you have enough football fields?
Where do you have? Yeah, where are they playing?
I mean, my God,
everyone's got to play in the Roomba.
Oh God. Okay. So again, we're looking for realistic things.
Yes. Las Vegas. I'm sure there are other football fields in Vegas. You play the primetime matchup for every week in the Roomba, and the rest of them have to play at the outdoor fields that you can build in the vast desert that you've got there.
Again, we're looking for realistic things.
I'm giving you one.
I realistically, Trey, I don't know where you can do it. I don't think you could do that.
What have we said all along that the NFL is not going to be able to emulate that bubble thing?
Or
The plan has been for the NFL not to do that. I don't know. Look, this is Dr. Fauci saying what he believes,
Well, a lot of people, the doctors, talk about a second wave coming through at some point in the winter, which we all kind of have just been, okay, but that would be a direct impact on football, which is in the meat of it right then, coming toward the end of the college football, but right in the meat of the NFL season.
And so in all seriousness, when you look at what would a bubble entail for the NFL, you're already going to be dealing with an environment that probably, if that's the case and that's a reality you're going to have to start to anticipate, is going to have to forsake that whole idea of fans and stands thing. Like, you got to let that one go if this is going to be the case, and the travel model isn't going to be viable in that. So if you remove all of that, the need for stands and all those things becomes a lot lesser. And if you could get to an area that had an abundance of fields, an abundance of space, and was going to be largely based out near the West Coast, that would be ideal in all of this, because you would need weather that would hold for the most part through the course of that season. You would need a ton of space and a ton of places to put all of the bodies associated with NFL football teams. That is honestly why Vegas popped into my mind at first, is what place has the ability to house and facilitate all of the bodies that you would need for an NFL season? It is pretty much only Las Vegas and the amount of hotel rooms and spaces that they would have in that.
Again, the NFL has maintained that its plan is to start the regular season on schedule with that Thursday night game when the Chiefs host the Texans. We all know the off-season program and the draft is basically done remotely, but the plan is for training camps to be held in person starting in late July. So we've seen college football players start to matriculate back to some schools, and we've had some positive tests pop up, some more than others because they were only testing people that had symptoms at the University of Houston.
Right.
But at the end of the day, we had Lincoln Riley on today. And we had, as I said, Dr. Allen says, at the end of the day, you got to play. You got to play football. You have to start the process. And Ravens head coach John Harbaugh has already chimed in saying the virus limitations we have now are basically humanly impossible.
Let me just say, if they can't play the way they want to play and everybody's home, it's not going to happen. Because I don't think a bubble is going to happen. I mean, you're talking 53 players on a roster. They're going to expand them from practice squad more. So even go up to 65 or so. Throw coaches in there, you're at 80. All other personnel, you're at least 100 people per team at 32 teams. That's over 3,200 people. The NBA right now at 37 a team is about 1,100 people. So you're tripling that for an entire city. There's no way a bubble can happen.
I'm just telling you this. With the NFL, I can at least see with the resources, time, and ability they have as a professional organization dealing with only 32 teams in that, I can say, you know what? I can invent a way, and I'm sure they would exhaust every option of looking into how that's possible. College football would be dead where it stands.
Oh, yeah. College football. Question.
I mean, there wouldn't be a prayer that this could happen. And the issue is with all this, and what Dr. Fauci has pointed out, is you have to deal with the surrounding environments into every place you travel in. Because, yeah, when you travel a team into town, you can hold them up in the hotel, control what comes in and out, all those things. But you can't control who everyone else on that other team has interacted with while they're in their homes, while they're in their area. And those variables, I have a feeling, would be the issue. I mean, college football would be dead where it stands.
Completely agree with that.
And if that's the case, college athletics across the board,
more than likely,
would be in a ton of trouble.
Oh boy, Dr. Fauci.
On that one. So we'll see what happens and see what happens going forward. And that one have a lot more conversation on that tomorrow, I would imagine, on Friday's edition of Golic and Wingo.
We'll we'll get an answer on if Beethoven was black.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Yes.
For Alvin Kamara.
As well as a St. Bernard. Plus, we'll have Florida State head coach Mike Norvell, Sue Bird, L. Duncan, and Mike Tirico. Plus, we'll play That Bites and Love It or Shove It. We got a lot on the show
we got
tomorrow.
A lot to do.
We'll see you on Friday, we believe.
I've started drinking early.